Yeah, that's not me. I'll tell you that.
One of you guys has a computer going, so you're hearing it through the internet, which is fine.
Hey guys, I'm here.
Yep. Yeah, and by the way, it's a good 18-second delay if you're listening on the net, so somebody's got to turn it down.
You want me to turn? Maybe it's me. I'm up a little bit.
Are you speaking through the computer, Judy, or are you using a
no,
telephone?
No, I'm talking on my phone.
Okay. Do you have a computer running?
Uh-huh.
You'll have to turn or press the pause or the stop button.
On the...
On your screen, if you have your computer. Or
okay.
Just press mute on your computer, however you do that.
Okay.
It's usually your volume control. There's like a little button that looks
okay.
Like volume control.
All right. But I'll be able to hear everybody
Mike,
on the phone.
Is actually going out live?
Oh, yeah,
I thought it was just
being
recorded.
No. We're going live.
Okay.
And we are actually live. So, Chris, if you want to take it away, it's all yours, buddy.
All right, guys. Welcome, everybody, to the call. This is Millionaire Smackdown. We've had a little hiatus from our little summer break. And today we have the catcher versus the keeper. We have Judy Cornett. For those of you that don't know, Judy Cornett runs a predator patrol. She finds predators or sexual pedophiles that have been released. She monitors them and makes sure that they do not violate terms of their parole, but she also makes sure that they don't infiltrate the neighborhoods in which they're trying to get in. Many times, from what I understand through Judy, is they try and pop up in neighborhoods where a lot of kids are playing around, a playground, a school, a pool, community pool.
Low income.
And, sure, yeah, in low-income neighborhoods. And John Folger is a business person, an investor who invests in mobile home parks and does a lot of nonprofit work for the community. And he is also a gentleman that helps place sexual offenders as well as people that are in alcohol rehab facilities and all kinds of things that need help, I guess, getting reorientated in the community. So we got this, the catcher versus the keeper. And I want to start off with John. And John, if you could just explain a little bit more of how you got into this from your side of things and how you started to, help house sexual offenders.
Well, I think my story is probably not very unique. When I was first introduced to the idea of working with sex offenders, I had the same reaction that I think most people do, since I don't think you could classify me as a bleeding heart liberal under most circumstances. So my first reaction is that, this was a business, and I was actually introduced to investing in some mobile home parks and other properties that were housing sex offenders. And my first reaction is there's no way in hell I'm going to do this. It just doesn't make any sense, and I would be happy to pull the switch on most of these guys because I have the same, attitude that I think probably 90% of the walking public has. And it really wasn't until I actually, I went to another meeting, that I really didn't want to go to, but I actually started talking to some of these guys, and it was the first time that I realized that there was a fairly broad spectrum and a gradation of offense that these guys go through or these guys commit, and they're not all child molesters or predators. There are a lot of people that get caught up in this because they're either high on drugs or alcohol and they do something stupid, or they have the Romeo and Juliet situation, which is, where you're dating your high school sweetheart and you're a freshman in college and she happens to be 17, and next thing you're facing 8 years in prison. So there, and the other thing I didn't realize is that in the state of Florida, and this is probably true in other states as well, I'm not picking on Florida per se, if you happen to be drinking heavily in a bar and you leave and urinate in a manner so that somebody might possibly see you, or if you're driving on the side of the road and pull over to relieve yourself and someone happens to see you, that makes you a sex offender. The laws have become very strict. The situation is that politicians really love the idea of cracking down and making law and order a great claim, which makes everybody feel safer. The fact of the matter is I don't think that we're doing the right job to actually help some of these people that really do need some help. And I want to say that also that I have a perspective on sex offenders, they are probably 10 to 15% of the population with whom we work. As you mentioned, Chris, we also invest in housing and invest in nonprofits or lend money to nonprofits that are focused on rebuilding people's lives. Some of them are drug and alcohol rehab housing. They may be veterans. They may be people who are dual diagnosed or bipolar. You know, there's another program that I'm aware of that we may get involved with but haven't yet, called Aging Out of Foster Care, because, you know, little did I know that when children become 18 and they're in foster care, at their 18th birthday, they get thrown on the street because they no longer qualify. So whether they're
okay.
Ready to...
Well, John, I want to take it over to Judy. And Judy, I know you've dealt with people in the community recently. You were in the papers locally with another lady that was housing sex offenders.
Right.
Can you tell us what your take is on this? And for people that don't
okay,
know,
well,
your son was abused in your neighborhood. Is that correct? That's how you started becoming an advocate.
Yeah, in 1992. But let me start off with saying that I want to answer some of John's questions and kind of respond to
sure,
a couple of
ahead.
Things that I read on his email. He was claiming that there are categories of offenders that he will not assist because he's not a bleeding heart liberal, but he recognizes that there is current legal, environmental issues that are ruining people's lives permanently because of stupid things that they do. Number one, urinating in public is not a sex crime, not in the state of Florida, not in any state that I know of. It is a misdemeanor. The charge can be disorderly conduct or indecent exposure. It's not a sex crime. To qualify as a sex offender, you have to commit a third-degree felony, a sex crime, which would include a violent rape against an adult or a sex crime against a child, including child porn or enticement, not urinating in public. If they're masturbating in public, then yes, that is a crime, and then they can be listed as a sex offender. Also, I read in the notes that you had mentioned something about saying using foul language around a minor. That's absurd, and that's not a crime. Also, you mentioned targeting a minor in a bar with expectations that the person was under 21. Give me a break. If that's the case, in the state of Florida, we have the Romeo and Juliet case. Pardon?
Right. Forgive me, because I did say that the assumption was that they would be over 21, not under 21.
Well, hopefully men are smart enough, regardless of how desperate they are to get laid, that they'll be a little cautious as to who they pick. Young girls are pretty obvious. If they're under the age of 18, they shouldn't be in the bar to begin with. Hopefully there's somebody at the door or in the bar that's checking IDs to make sure this doesn't happen. If this case does arise and a guy ends up having sex with a girl that he picks up in the bar who is a minor, then I tell you what, the Romeo and Juliet case is out there, or the law is out there for them. In Florida, if a girl is 16 or 17, the boy must be 24 or older to be illegal. If it's consensual sex, then he can also fight this and fall under the the Romeo and Juliet law. We've already had 20 sex offenders taken off the registry because of the Romeo and Juliet law. Also, say a girl's 15 and the boy's 18, the Romeo and Juliet law is going to protect them as well. I mean, if there's an age variance of 4 years, that law is out there to protect those people. So
I appreciate that. And lots of people are familiar with, I think his name was Gunnar Law Wilson up in Georgia. I know we're not talking about Georgia necessarily. And how stupid must you be to start filming any kind of a sex act at all? But the issue was, you know, this guy got, 10 years in prison when it should have been a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing? I mean, I don't claim to know everything about that case, Judy. You may
right,
know
but was she, was it consensual or was she a
yes,
non-willing participant?
He was with his girlfriend and was stupid enough to use his cell phone to record oral sex and the prosecutor.
Oh, that was the African-American guy, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think they ended up dropping those charges.
Yeah, but
Judy, your concern, talk about your concerns about when, let's say, someone starts housing offenders within a community.
Okay. I feel that it is a money-making deal with a lot of these investors, and I think that that is a shameful thing for some of these people to do. I have no problem with sex offenders being roommates occasionally, but I do have a problem with people that like to profit by clustering these guys in mobile home parks. We end up creating ghetto-type neighborhoods. Whenever you buy these low-income trailers and you put four and five people in one trailer, I don't think that that's right. I don't think it's healthy for the sex offenders, and I think that that should be something that our community should look at. Unfortunately, what has happened now is that because of the people who are looking at this profit business and making money off of sex offenders, they're not going to go and charge those people that much rent if it was just for that one trailer. The four sex offenders that are renting the trailer, say, for example, it's $400 per person. That's $1,600 for one trailer, and that's a trailer. You can get a four-bedroom house for that price. I'm going to have to change phones, guys. Sorry about that.
Well, while she changes phones, you're good, Judy. John, do you want to respond to that?
I'm here. Yes, I have a response.
Can you respond to what Judy just said?
Judy has a point. If you were assuming that the costs of running an operation were consistent with just doing a normal rental project, what also should happen in these circumstances, and I will agree with her, there are investors that do take advantage. That happens in any kind of real estate play. The fact of the matter is that in the circumstances where you can find a mobile home park or an apartment building or whatever the housing might be, and those are very limited facilities just because of the distance from schools and churches and so on. So you're not talking about being able to put these people anywhere. But the fact of the matter is when you can find a facility that meets that criteria, you have issues that are now called, program responsibilities. You've got to coordinate with nonprofits. You've got to coordinate with the Department of Corrections. You should be having security systems in place. You should have monitoring systems in place. You should have cameras. There's a whole additional layer of responsibility that you undertake in these projects if you do it properly. I think what Judy is talking about is that there are lots of people who are looking to bundle, populations of various types in all kinds of different properties, and that's true. I mean, whether it's college students or other people who are not involved in the criminal justice system, but the fact of the matter is, there is a profit that can be made. The other side of it is that, from our circumstances, what we try to do is to acquire properties that might be appropriate for these kinds of housing. And whether it's ex-offenders or sex offenders or drug and alcohol rehab, the charges are different depending on the cost structure of what you go through. Investors who put up money to buy properties that these people can live in and feel safe and live in a structured environment are going to have to bear the cost. And obviously those investors are looking for some sort of return on their money, just as any other investor would be. Then you layer on top of that the cost of monitoring, placing structure, management and operations, and you have a lot of additional expenses that you quite frankly just don't have in traditional housing. So while
hey, John,
it look like you might be able
yeah,
to
but you know what the thing
money.
Is, the traditional housing is where we all live. Sex offenders are not excluded from that. They shouldn't have to go live into these trailer parks where there's three and four of them living in a trailer. They should follow the same policies and procedures that we have to do. There's people out there that are low income, that can't get jobs, that can't afford to move into a home, and they have to go into trailer parks, but there are sex offenders out there that can afford to live elsewhere.
And the fact of the matter is, in this job market where they can't get jobs or where they're not welcome in communities, and Judy, I'm not saying this is you, but you know that there are people that will harass the living daylights.
Right, but there's also homeless people out there that aren't sex offenders that are going through the same thing. We don't have to baby these guys. These guys need to work hard and try to get themselves back on their feet, and they don't need people to say, hey, I tell you what, we'll rent you a bed for $200 a week. Come stay with us. I mean, we need to make these guys become productive citizens of our community and work like everybody else does. They don't need to be clustering up in these little trailer parks, which a lot of these trailer parks are little ghettos and communities now. And I don't agree with that. I think that sex offenders, and there's a couple different types of sex offenders. I mean, we don't want to create a lot of hysteria that somebody's opening up a trailer park and there's a whole bunch of sex offenders. You have to do your homework. There's some of them in there that may have had a Romeo and Juliet case that just hasn't had the money to hire a lawyer. But that's a very, very small percentage. These sex offenders that you're talking about, that you say that you're selective with your sex offenders and that there's all these cases that, you're using examples of, I mean, those are the guys that can move on my street. I don't care. If they urinated in public and they're a registered sex offender, they can live in my neighborhood. But if they molest a child, I don't want them around. And I hope that those are the ones that you don't allow into your premises either.
And that's correct. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, as I said right from the beginning, there are some types of people that that nobody really wants to touch. I mean, the issue too is that, you know, you have kind of a nesting mentality with some of these people because they feel more comfortable being around people who have some similar backgrounds and similar frustrations,
okay,
trying to work their way through the system.
But, John, we're not here to coddle them. We're not here to make them feel comfortable. They committed a crime, and they have to pay their consequences, and they have to get themselves back into society. We don't take a little baby who fell out of a nest that mama pushed out and put it back up there because it's comfortable with its mommy. You got to let these guys go, and they've got to go out into society, and they have to go ahead and rebuild their lives. We can't enable them by putting them in clusters and living amongst each other.
I think I would disagree with that on the following grounds. You know, one of the things that we have seen, and I won't say that I've been doing this for 10 years because it's really only been a little bit more than a year, so I've got a limited range of experience, but I have seen how these programs work. Because I work with some of the groups that with whom you are already familiar, obviously. Now, the issue that I see is that these people that generally come out, that, you know, when they first come out of prison, they are usually extremely disoriented and don't know what to do. They don't have any guidance. They don't have any structure. And you're right. They should be motivated just like every other citizen. But for lots of reasons, they come out of prison or out of confinement, and they are really extremely disoriented. By being involved in a program that is easy to manage, where they get some structure, where they get to go to AA meetings, because a large part of the sex offender population with which I'm familiar are the people that have done something really stupid, either under drug or the circumstances of drug and alcohol.
But let me cut you off for a minute there. First of all, there's hundreds of people every day that get drunk. And you know what? To use the excuse as alcohol is not an excuse, because you know what? They have the desire to molest before they drink. And if they're going to do it, they had that desire beforehand. It's not because they got drunk that they went out and molested somebody. So that is wrong for you to say that they went out and used drugs and they went out and used alcohol and that's why they molested. That is not an excuse.
Judy, John, I just want to get on this point because Judy brings up a great point. So it's not the alcohol that made them molest someone. It's the alcohol that maybe loosened up their
already. It lowered their inhibitions to do it.
Yeah, to go do what they were going to do anyways. They've been thinking about it. Is that correct?
Right.
So it's like a disease. Is that what you're trying to say? Because a lot of people think
that. Yeah, a child molester is a child molester no matter what. Alcohol is not going to make you a molester.
And
John, what do you have to say to that?
I will agree with that to the following point. The fact of the matter is that if these are people that have either drug or alcohol problems, one way to reduce their rate of recidivism is to make sure that they keep the drug and alcohol problem under check. Because if these people are out on probation for a year or 2 years, where they're carefully monitored and carefully supervised by their by the Department of Corrections or their parole officer, the more assistance and support they can get, the better opportunities they have to become good performing citizens, which is what we all want.
Right, but that's not in the real world. 75% of our registered sex offenders aren't even being supervised. And also, more than 50% of them fall under over 50% of our registered sex offenders were sentenced before 1994, and they don't even fall under sex offender condition rules. And those are the guys you're talking about that are just now getting out that have served 10, 15 years. They don't have any conditions.
And
so
I
all of that.
That's a serious problem because I have the same issue
that
you do, which is I want to know where these guys are and I want to know that they're supervised because I think they are probably. I think the community is better off knowing where they are, knowing that they're under some measure of control and some measure of maintenance, some measure of program, and that they're getting help, and they're much more likely to then be successful in whatever it is that they need to do. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, when these guys come out of prison, some of them they don't even know what the heck to do. You know, the following day they don't know where to get their driver's license done. They don't know where to get their voter registration done. They don't know how to go and fill out an application. Some of them don't even know how to read and write anymore. And there are guys that have come out, and I know one that had never even seen a cell phone. So I mean, these are people that can be left to just drift through the population. And I think that you have a much more potentially higher rate of recidivism if you've got somebody that doesn't have some structure, to at least give him a channel to go through a process to be successful.
Hey, guys, this is Mike Warren in Colorado. I got a bunch of questions that came in from some of our listeners. We have a couple thousand listeners on listening to us through the web right now, so welcome to everybody. But I'd like to read you some of the questions that came in, if that's okay with Judy and John, if that's okay with you guys.
Sure.
Of course, sure.
Okay. Here's one from Sherry and Gardner. This is directed to Judy. Judy, how do you feel about the Child Protection Act and morality in media's point that child pornography, pedophilia, rape, and other sex crimes can be linked to pornography, and that the Child Protection Act is attacking the symptoms instead of attacking the disease that pornography breeds?
You know what? I'm not real familiar with that. I think that we need to go to the core of the source, and I think the core of our problem with that is to get the people off the internet that are doing these sex crimes and doing and has possession of these child pornography.
Okay.
Well,
then
follow the question to that.
Sure.
I mean, Judy, what's your position on some of these other issues that are going on with internet porn and the amount of child pornography that's being delivered through the internet, where you don't even know that the recipient is getting it? They come through pop-up ads and so on.
Right. I have somebody who works on those issues, and you know what? Those pop-ups we can't control. I guarantee you that every one of those listeners out there have some sort of pop-up porns on their computers, and they don't even know it.
Yeah, you know, I heard a horror story from a friend of mine who happens to be a real estate investor who, to his horror, he had his computer worked on. He just brought it down to the local Circuit City or one of those places.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a call from the police because, you know, that was in his hard drive, and he had no idea it was there.
But the cops know whether it was something they opened up or something they didn't open up. I mean, those pop-ups, you know, I mean, there's a big difference. They know how to tear those systems apart. But child porn is completely out of control, and I think that we need to have more people working on the internet, because that's what's fueling a lot of these child predators is the child porn. You watch How to Catch a Predator, and it's just all day long. Those guys are catching the bait. You know, I mean, it's just all day long. These child molesters on the internet, that's the new tool. And I've had over 100 MySpace accounts shut down already because of sex offenders.
I have to admit that I agree with you 100% in that regard. I mean, the problem is that, I mean, you used to have to go down, and I don't know how old anybody is, but you know, when I was a kid, I mean, you had to embarrass yourself to go to the store and actually get, you know, the books in brown paper wrappers, and God forbid if your mother ever found you with them because they beat the crap out of you. I mean, the problem is that this is delivered into your living room or den, and you can see it, your kids can see it. It's just available to everybody everywhere.
Right. No, that's okay. I was just going to apologize to Sherry because I didn't have a direct answer for her. But if she wants to email me, I can do some research and give her some more information if she would like.
Well, you know, I have
Judy.
Yes.
Judy, go ahead and give
your
email.
Go ahead.
My email address is safetyzoneteam@aol.com. So if anybody's out there and wants to email me personally, or you can go to my website, safetyzoneadvocacy.org, and you can shoot me an email that way as well.
Okay. We got another question. This is from Pam in Florida. Another question. It's actually kind of directed at both you guys, but starts out with Judy. I know you're opposed to extreme residential restrictions such as the Polk County 2,500-foot rule, and that you supported Tampa and Hillsborough County officials with the anti-loitering restrictions. But if investors decide to move into Tampa, will you support anti-clustering ordinances to discourage this? And if so, how many offenders do you think should be allowed to live together or in the same complex?
I will 100% support. Well, no, I won't. If they try to put the 2,500-foot rule in Tampa, I won't agree with it for many, many reasons. I think that that causes more of the clustering problem, and I feel that, you know what, I'm losing my train of thought. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to look up
Judy,
some stuff.
Judy, explain what the 2,500-foot rule is for those of us that don't know.
Well, actually, we have. In the state of Florida, there's a 1,000-foot rule, and what that is that a sex offender cannot live within 1,000 foot of a school, a daycare, a church, any place where children congregate. There's a lot of counties in Florida who are trying to make 2,500 foot, and we have several counties who have already passed it.
Polk County is one of them, and Miami is another. In those counties, they have homeless sex offenders because of the 2,500-foot rule, and not only because of that, is Hillsborough County and Pinellas is becoming the dumping ground because they have nowhere else to go. If we create the 2,500-foot rule, then we're kicking our sex offenders in Hillsborough County into somebody else's county, and I don't want to do that. I think we need to take care of our own. We need to put our sex offenders in housing where they are going to be unlikely to reoffend and not push them into somebody else's neighborhood.
So let me ask you.
In Hillsborough County, we only have 3 registered sex offenders that are homeless. And that's better than anywhere else. In Miami, there's 30 sex offenders that are homeless and they're living under bridges. We don't have a housing problem for sex offenders in Hillsborough County.
How many sex offenders total in Hillsborough County?
Approximately 1,500. And there's 1,100 square miles in Hillsborough County. And in one neighborhood alone in Hillsborough County, it's a low-income area, they have over 500 sex offenders within a 3-mile radius of the city pool.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that in the context of, instead of cluster housing, where these people would be better supervised? I'm not sure I follow.
Well, you know what, John? There's apples and oranges there. Are they being supervised or are they not being supervised? Are we putting sex offenders in low-income housing because it's making money for people, or are we putting them in these communities where they're going to be in a program? You can't make these sex offenders participate in a program, especially if they have no conditions.
You're correct if they have no conditions, although, as you realize, some of them do it voluntarily, although I can't say that that's most of them. From our standpoint, we look for people that are coming out of prison that have either a minimum of a year to possibly 2 years of probation or parole so that they have to be managed.
Right, but not by you. They have to be managed by Department of Corrections. They have probation officers that manage them.
That is correct. But the other thing that we do offer, since we work with various nonprofits, is we have, as I said, you know, the drug and alcohol programs. We have the counseling meetings and all the other things that will help give these guys a leg up, so that after a year or after 2 years, when their probation is ended, they are much more used to living on the outside. They already have jobs. They've rebuilt their credit. You know, maybe they found a sweetheart or something and are looking to buy a house or do something else and move on with their lives, and they have a much better sense of
but that's all voluntary. I mean, if they don't comply with one of your conditions, all you do is kick them out. You can't hold it against them. You can't take it to court unless it's a criminal offense.
In the voluntary ones, that's correct. The ones that are on probation or parole, if they don't play by the rules, they can become violated and go back to prison.
If it's in their conditions, if the court ordered those conditions to that sex offender, you're not one to make the rules for them. It has to be a court-ordered condition.
You are absolutely correct. I didn't say that I made the rules. I said that we look for the types of clients that have those kinds of conditions and rules.
Right.
My question is, who pays for all these guys to get rehabilitated? That's what I want to know.
Actually, you know, this goes back to Judy's opening argument, which is, you know, how much these things cost. And nobody's paying $200 a week anywhere that I know of. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, if they're paying $130 or $140 or $150 bucks a week, which is probably more the norm, that generally includes their utilities and includes the programs that they need.
And how many in one trailer? How many beds do you have in one trailer?
It depends on the size of the trailer or the type of housing unit, Judy. I mean,
okay.
Obviously we can't put 4 people in one bedroom because, you know, you'd have knife fights every night.
Okay,
so
because I have visited these colonies. I've visited these investors' trailer parks, and I've taken pictures from a distance. I've zoomed into some of the windows of the vacant homes, and they had bunk beds in the living room, bunk beds in the bedroom. So you're going to tell me that you're going to put 2 sex offenders in one bedroom, or are you only going to put 1 sex offender per bedroom?
Again, it depends. I'm not going to misrepresent anything. It depends on the size of the unit. It depends on whether it's an apartment.
Why would you put 2 adult males in a bedroom?
There are times when there are 2 males in a bedroom. If the bedroom
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? You're taking advantage of these sex offenders that have nowhere to go, and you're charging them this amount of money to share a bedroom with another person. Why can't they have their own bedroom if it's not a money-making thing? If you're not out to make money from this, why are you clustering them in one trailer?
The reason is for capacity. We get lots of people who've been living in weekly rental hotels that are spending as much or more, and then they don't have utilities. They don't.
So you're competing with hotels? They would be better off in a hotel. They would have their own privacy.
That's in some cases that's true, but they also, in many cases, are also subject to crack dealers and drug dealers and everything else. Which
well, so are they staying in these clustered trailer parks too? Because you don't only take in sex offenders; you're taking in drug addicts and you're taking in other crimes that have occurred with these people. So they're also subjected. You know, a lot of these hotels are doing the same thing you're doing. They're raising their prices because they're getting the sex offenders in their communities as well, and the drug dealers because the probation officers are putting them there. Just like the probation officers are hooking them up with you. It's the same concept. You're not taking them out of one environment and making it any better by putting them in yours.
Hey, Judy, this is true because when they're in the hotel operation or living on their own, they generally, I mean, most of these people don't have cars, they don't have licenses. In a lot of cases, they don't have drive any way to get anywhere. They don't have jobs. You know, for the first couple of weeks, if we underwrite their existence while we're helping them get on their feet, the fact of the matter is that in most cases they're pretty grateful because they're not living on the street. You know, they don't make enough money in a lot of cases to live in these weekly rental hotels where you have to pay every week regardless.
So you just said you're charging the same price as what they would be paying if they were staying in a motel.
They're paying $150 to $200 a week.
Right.
With no program, no support, no supervision, no anything.
Yeah, but there's programs out there. Are you going to tell me that if you have a program that if somebody's not renting from you, no, they're not allowed to come into your program and take advantage of the services that you provide? They have to rent from you to be a part of the services?
I wouldn't say that, but as you can imagine, most of the situation that we deal with are people that are part of our operation. You know, of course, we don't close our doors to anyone. I mean, some of the other programs some of the other nonprofits that we work with are faith-based, and they don't differentiate at all. I mean, there are a lot of opportunities that are open for these people for anybody who wants to help themselves.
Right.
You know, we're certainly not going to stop
if there's a sex offender that's living in the motel down the street, can't he go and get help from his church, or maybe call you guys up and you guys can still help him get a driver's license? Why do you have to put?
We have done that.
Okay, so why are you marketing? Go ahead, because I pulled you up on the internet, and I see that you're soliciting on the internet to people trying to buy their trailer parks because you have offenders that you need to house, and you have a substantial large amount of offenders that you can guarantee housing if people would let you lease their trailer parks.
Mm-hmm. That would be true.
So this is a money making thing for you. That's all I want to know. Are you out for this in the profit end of things?
Well, let me put that in context. You know, I'm not a young man anymore, and I wish that I had seen this opportunity and this challenge much earlier in my professional life. I used to run a publicly traded company at another time in my life. The fact of the matter is, I like the opportunity to be able to help people, and yes, my investors do get to make a couple of bucks on it. You know, you're not going to get rich quick, and this is not a get rich quick scheme. You know, despite what other people think, the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of money that's involved in this. There's a lot of time that's involved in it. There's a lot of coordination that's involved in it, and you're dealing with a portion of the population that lots of people won't touch. So the reality is, you know, it gives me great satisfaction to see somebody who's been able to get a job, buy a car, rebuild their life, and be able to make something out of their lives, even though they, for whatever reason, they've trashed the first portion of it.
And I can appreciate that.
The fact of the matter is, you know, it's good for the soul, and the fact that we need to make a profit because we're a profit-making company is not an embarrassment. The reality is...
But you know what? Those trailers, if you lump up, if you have six sex offenders in one trailer, and you're charging them $100-something per week, how much money does that come up to? Is that what you would rent that trailer to a single family for?
About
$900. Why don't you get all of these trailer
parks?
Why don't you get these trailer parks and open them up for single families? We have a lot of families out there that are low income that have nowhere to live that they can afford. Fix up these trailers and put some of these families in there.
Well, what you don't realize is that we also are interested in buying trailer parks that are just regular affordable housing programs for families, because obviously if you have the infrastructure to manage mobile home parks for offenders, or for drug and alcohol rehab people, or apartment buildings, you essentially are in the real estate management business. So the
right.
reality is to acquire properties that make great affordable housing programs for people who are not offenders or don't have any problems is a normal adjunct for us. And we understand that, and that's something we're very much interested in pursuing. The reality
okay,
that
and that's all wonderful, John, but you're making way too much money with sex offenders living in your trailer parks. It's outrageous.
But
those trailers are not worth the monthly amount of money that you're receiving on those. You guys are taking money. You guys are taking money from the sex offenders who committed a heinous crime, and you're pocketing that money. That money, if you're going to collect that money, you should turn around and give that to the victims.
Actually, that I wish life were that simple.
It could be. That trailer's monthly rent is worth no more than $600 a month, I guarantee you, with the trailers that I've seen these guys live in. And you guys are making over $1,000 per trailer. That, to me, is not fair.
And what does it cost, then, to create the supervision, the infrastructure, the overhead, the management, the security systems, and the programs that go into it, plus you're also covering all of their utilities?
Well, then you know what? You need to be an Avila. You need to put all of that stuff into a big community where people can afford those expenses. These people can't. You're putting them in little trailers that I don't feel is good for their success rate. I think that is a setup for failure when you have six people crammed into one trailer. That's not healthy for anybody. And I've spoke to sex offenders who have told me that.
I would agree with you if your assumption of six people per trailer was accurate, and it's just not. I mean, I think that may apply to two trailers out of hundreds. You know,
I've got pictures, and I've got other people that have lived in those conditions. I've got sex offenders in Tampa that I visited and interviewed that were living in trailers with two per bedroom in a three-bedroom trailer. That's six people. Also,
hey, Judy, I got a question from your friend Tony Wiley here from online. He emailed in and he said, where are the sex offenders supposed to live if you don't want them in any neighborhood with children? If any neighborhood with schools and any neighborhood with parks, that would eliminate about 90% of the communities in America. So his point is then, if that wasn't so, John wouldn't be doing what he's doing right now. It's because of the rules and regulations is what Tony Wiley is trying to say.
If we only have three homeless sex offenders in Hillsborough County is doing a pretty good job of placing these guys. Like I said before, 75% of these child molesters and sex offenders don't have conditions. They can live wherever they want. You can pull it up on the registry all day long, sex offenders in Hillsborough County, and I guarantee you, especially if you pull them up in Sulphur Springs, there's going to be sex offenders that live next to schools, next to daycares, next to churches,
right,
next to bus stops. It's that small percentage that don't have anywhere to go. But you know what?
Well,
they need to find a place to go. There's families out there, because of their credit, they can't live where they want to live, but they have to find somewhere to go, just like our sex offenders do. And they're out there.
Judy, I have a question for John. John, do you have any kind of rehabilitation for victims of sex offenders? Is there any programs for people like that out there?
There are that already exist. Those are not part of our program because, obviously, we're not housing the victims. We have very little contact with victims other than tangentially. So, I mean, as heinous as that is, that's a much larger program that, unfortunately, we don't have the wherewithal to attack.
Right, and I...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I keep cutting you off. I'm just over-anxious to say things. I wouldn't want to house sex offenders, so I can understand how John and them wouldn't want to be a part of helping the victims.
You know, I mean, we all help victims in different ways. I mean, one of the things that we're trying to do is to reduce the number of victims by curtailing the rate of recidivism. And I think your argument about the population in Tampa, I think, speaks very well to the kinds of programs that we are offering. You know, and again, I'm not saying that all we do is sex offenders and we're only in it for the money, because all we do is house six people in a three-bedroom trailer, because it's not indicative of everything that the company stands for. You know, the reality is that while that does happen, in many cases where you see that kind of condensed housing, it's for people who are just getting out of prison, where they're used to living on top of each other, and in fact, in some cases they think that it's the lap of luxury only having two people to a room, because they're used to living in a dormitory with 500 other guys. So the reality is that as part of a transitional program, and this does happen in stages. So, you know, Judy, there's accuracy in components to everything that you say. But the reality is that people come in from prison with nothing, and if we help buy them food, clothes, shoes, and all the other things that they need so that they can go out on a job interview, if we drive them all over God's creation to get all of their paperwork organized, you know, and I'm not saying we, I'm saying that the programs that we support. I don't want to give you the impression that I do this myself, because you know we have a pretty good range of relationships that do all that. And I have to give, you know, the volunteers and the people who are in the nonprofit industry really all of the credit. I'm just trying to provide, you know, the money, the systems, and the support to enhance their capability to help more people. That's really what this is about. But the reality
Right, but can't you do that without having to profit off of the housing of all of these guys and putting them into communities that you're clustering these guys?
Profit,
I mean, these...
Judy, if I don't profit, how will I get investors to put up the money to enlarge these programs that help as many people as it helps?
I don't have the answer for that. But I don't think that it's fair that
you
guys are profiting. I've visited several of these facilities, and all of those things that you mentioned, that you guys are providing services for these people, I would love to visit your facility. Do you have any that I can come and visit? I would love
to
see your security system that you've paid for and all of the services that you're providing for all these sex offenders, and maybe you'll be able to get me, you know, to agree with you. But at this point, I don't agree, because I've already met several people who operate under the same conditions that you have, and all I've seen is a money pit, and I haven't seen the services. I visited a place here in Tampa, and they promised me that this was a facility where they were rehabbing these guys. They were giving them therapy. They were providing education for them. They had a therapist that came on the property and visited with everybody. It was a bunch of nonsense. There was nothing, and there was no security system, and these guys were paying $200 a week, and they was putting 4 to 6 people in each trailer. One trailer had 11 people in it one night. And these guys had nothing.
I have no comment, since I don't know the particular property that you're talking about.
They had to ride the city bus. That was the transportation that they were taught how to ride, was the city bus. They didn't have a van come and pick them up. They were told how to ride a city bus and how to pay the bus driver.
I mean, I certainly won't deny that that happens. You know, the reality is, I mean, as you spoke before about, you know, looking for places that are in a more rural environment where it's away from populations and so on, In those cases, you have areas where they're not prone to find bus transportation, and you have to buy a bus or a small van to get people around, or provide somebody to, you know, pay somebody to use their car and their gas and pay them a couple of bucks to drive them around. So I mean, there are lots of other things that go along with this. You know, it's not just a straight, you know, here's a room, give me a check, and we're done. You know, although I'm sure you have seen lots of that, I have as well. That doesn't make it right, and I'm not advocating. Everybody, you know, who's ever been in this business, and I'm not saying everybody does it right or properly. I mean, it's just like anything else in the marketplace. You find, you know, good providers, bad providers, mediocre providers. It's just like anything else.
Are you willing to invite me to one of your facilities to let me see how the programs ran?
I would, sure.
Okay. And you have transportation that's provided to these individuals, and you provide them with clothing and...
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I would be interested to see how this works, because I haven't been impressed yet with the couple that I've already been introduced to.
Okay. I would be happy to do that. In the meantime, you know, I think we agree so far on the people that are unsupervised. Those are the ones, I think, that concern everyone. I think our concern is misplaced, probably for good reasons. But the validity of worrying about people who are maybe housed three to a trailer that has, you know, 2.5 bedrooms to it, probably is not the worst circumstance in the world. I think the bigger problem is the people that are unsupervised, and I think the general population doesn't understand the gradations of the populations. You know, the people that are that the Romeo offenders versus the predators and the child molesters, and the number of those that are running through the countryside, as you pointed out, living anywhere where there is no supervision, no control, and who. Because of their time in prison, have already learned how to scam the system, which happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, I just want, I want to make sure that before we end this conversation tonight, I really don't know how much more time we have, but I just want to clarify with you, John, I don't know how educated you are with the sex offenders, but I do want to let you know that sex offenders that are on our registry, 90% or more are dangerous and a threat to society, or they wouldn't be where they are. With you enlightening the situation and saying that, you know, it's urinating in public and guys picking up girls from bars and, you know, doing something stupid while drunk, those are very, very rare cases. I don't want people to think that that's what a majority of our sex offenders are, because it is not.
Actually, from the statistics that I've read, it seems that about 80% of the cases seem to be in the lower echelon of offense. And also, from what I understand, the if the statistics are correct from the Department of Corrections, the rate of recidivism under predators and others is somewhere in the 2 to 5% range. Is that
it's actually 25%. It's actually
25%.
Right. And that's
how
recidivism.
How are both your numbers so
that's
far off?
That's the ones who get
how
caught.
How are your numbers off?
Pardon? It depends on who's doing the survey. I could do a
yeah,
survey
a,
every day.
He has a totally different view than you do, Judy. Who's, which numbers are correct? Because we're hearing two different stories and... you know, I'm confused.
The numbers that I have are directly from the Department of Corrections, because one of my associates is a Department of Corrections officer who's been with them for 13 years.
Okay, but you know what? You have to also understand what type of sex crimes are those. Is that study overall of every sex crime, or is that on the child molesters and on the high reoffense-rated sex offenders? I have a probation officer friend as well. I have several of them. And if you go through the registry on the Florida FDLE website, you will see a lot of them have reoffended.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of them. You will see failure to register. You'll see new crimes. I do it all day long. I go on the computer and look people up, and there's 3 and 4 arrests because they reoffended.
Well,
if there's any listeners out there that are probation officers, will you type in and tell us what you think?
Well,
I think
sure
Mike has all that already.
Oh, okay. But they do reoffend it, and we have to understand recidivism. You know what? That was a word that I never really knew what it meant until I got into this field.
Can
and
you
those are the ones
that
are caught. Recidivism are those who have been arrested for a new crime. They reoffended and were caught. It doesn't
so
count those
that
are reoffending out there that haven't got
caught.
Or the ones, and it also doesn't count those that the cases were thrown out and there wasn't enough evidence. Those are the ones that went back to jail.
I mean, it's very hard to lump those numbers together. I mean, you know, you've got to assume that if there wasn't enough evidence, you know, they can't prove a crime, and there may have been a crime, I mean, but you can't lump those numbers together. And the other thing is I want to break out, because it does happen, people that get violated because they fail to register. Because I I'm sure you know this too, Judy. I mean, people who have moved and they've tried to register, the system hasn't caught up, or they were in the process of moving. So some of these guys get slammed, and I'm not defending them as a class, but a lot of, there's a good percentage of the population that gets slammed for minor infractions, and they have to go back. So I mean, the reality is that there is a broad range of circumstances that affect these people. That is not the kinds of conditions that you find under the normal population.
Well, I know that a high percentage of the sex offenders that fail to register are doing it because they're trying to hide from the system. They're also falsifying their addresses. They're giving addresses that are not correct, and they're living elsewhere.
I don't disagree with that, and as a matter of fact, I think I made the point that there are some of these people who are very adept at knowing how to scam the system. I said
right.
that right from the beginning.
Yeah.
So that is a true statement, and you will find that among these people. But you also have the poor slob that's like a deer in headlights and doesn't know what he's doing. And in some cases, they screw things up. And for minor infractions, they wind up going back to prison, even though they didn't even know what the hell they did wrong.
Right, I agree. But a lot of our sex offenders have learned how to manipulate the system, and I'm talking about the baby rapers and the high risk cases, which is probably a high percentage of our sex offenders that are on the registry. As I said before, there is a very, very, very small percentage of sex offenders that probably shouldn't be on the register, but it's a very small percentage.
Well, I agree with that, but the point that I want to make that I think is really salient here is that anybody who spent any kind of time in prison pretty well knows, for any offense, pretty well knows how to scam any kind of system, because that's what they teach in prison. That's one of the reasons why I'm not as big a fan as some others about continuing to build prisons, because it teaches people that may be recoverable, you know, a whole set of values and techniques that you really don't want them to learn.
Right. It's survival in prison.
That's right.
John, I have a question. This is Mike Warren in Colorado. I have a question here from Justin in Tampa, and it's directed specifically to you. It says, John, you seem like a real smart and nice guy. Have you or someone you know had a family member raped, and maybe that's why you look at it in the way you do, because you haven't seen the side of the victims? So from Justin's perspective, how would you respond to something like that, John?
The answer to the question is yes. There's a very dear friend of mine who is a very vivacious gal. She happens to be incredibly tiny, but just a beautiful and terrific young woman, and she was raped twice. And actually, when she and I started dating, I was reluctant to tell her what I did for a living and what my mission was. And interestingly enough, when I told her, she started to cry, and she said, "Thank God, somebody is doing something to try to work with these people so that they're not out in the street going after people like me." Now, that happens to be her opinion. I indicated that I was going to be doing this call this evening, and she was thrilled to death that the public might get a chance to learn more about these people, because there is a percentage of them that can be helped. As I told you, the gratification, and Judy, this is to you, yes, you can make a couple of bucks in this, but only a couple. But the fact of the matter is the larger benefit and the larger relief that you get from it is watching people who can successfully rebuild their lives and turn into viable human beings. Because, you know, these are people that, you know, that may recidivate. But the fact of the matter is if you get them under the right circumstances and care for them properly, you've got a much better chance for them to be productive citizens and not be continuing problems. And that's one of the things that enforcement and jail doesn't do. There's no program in jail that teaches these people how to be productive citizens when they come out. That's not what jail is all about. And again, as I said, in the beginning, I am not a bleeding heart liberal. There are lots of people that should be in prison. There are lots of people that I'd be happy to pull a switch on myself. But the reality is that I do see that there are some of these people that are either, you know, drunk, drug addicts, morons, or in other ways driven to commit, you know, antisocial behavior, and they need to be bitch slapped pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is you can do that when you've got them in some kind of a program where they're supported and you expect them and demand from them that they comply with the rules, because that's what they have to have. If they don't have structure and if they don't have cause and effect, they can't succeed. Living in an extended stay motel is not the best place for somebody who's got too much time on their hands.
That's for anybody.
That's probably true, but it's much better, particularly for these guys. What I have seen, and I've seen some of the things that Judy is complaining about also, but what I've also seen is four or five guys sitting around making a barbecue and thrilled to death that they actually have the freedom to cook a couple of hamburgers on a grill and listen to some music without somebody coming over and threatening them and harassing them and doing all the other things that tends to happen on the outside, so that they can at least breathe while they're trying to rebuild their lives. You know, it does take a while for them to get over the shell shock of coming out into the community and recognizing that for the rest of their lives, whatever they have done, for the rest of their lives, they are going to have to register every year as a sex offender, and their lives will never be the same. And I have met the husbands of young children who can't go back to their wives and kids anymore because they're branded as a sex offender and they can't even live with their wife anymore.
And the victims cannot live a normal life either anymore. The sex offenders have given a life sentence to these victims out there. So you know what? They're not alone. They got to look over their shoulder, and they're going to have a tough time in life. But guess what? The victims are too. The victim's life is destroyed. They planted a demonic seed in those children. So you know what? That seed is infested in them as well. And I don't think that there is anybody out there that should cater to their needs, because you know what? There is no place out there that's catering to the victim's needs. The victims are forgotten in all of this. Sex offenders are coming out, and there's people out there that want to rehabilitate them and cater to them and make them a productive citizen and give them all of these glorified living conditions and what have you. But you know what? What about the victims?
Well, but it is, isn't it my understanding that there are a host of support services, particularly for victims of sex crimes?
It's very rare. It sounds like there's probably a lot of places, but there really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sad. The victims, there's...
Now that you brought that to my attention, and I appreciate that bit of wisdom from you, and that's something that I will look into, because I agree with you. I mean, I know how devastated my friend was and what it's done to her life. I mean, she
mm-hmm.
lives her life like a deer in headlights.
Right.
And because once you have been violated at that level, your life is not normal ever again. So I absolutely agree with Judy in that regard.
It's horrible. It's devastating. And, you know, I get emails all day long. I get emails 24 hours a day, and it's people who are living the same life that I've lived with my son, and it's not fun. The victims are having a horrible time trying to fit into society. They have no self-esteem. They have no confidence. They have the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personality. They feel like there's a monkey on their back. They don't have people skills anymore. Everything is stripped from them. Everything. They live in a closet.
How, as tragic as that is, you know, I'm not excusing the sex criminals, believe me. But the reality is that at least the victims, they have a family structure, they have people that they can go to who put their arms around them and help them, whether they need psychological help or any other kind of emotional help. You know, there are systems in place that are available for all kinds of emotional issues. The problem with the other side of the table, which is why it's so vital, is that there's very limited numbers of successful opportunities that these people can do as an outreach for some real assessments. And I'm very much in favor of not having anyone else ever be a victim of any kind of sexual crime. Now, that's not realistic, and that would make me a bleeding heart liberal because, you know, the fact of the matter is I know the world operates differently than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we can all do, both from the victim's standpoint and from the offender's standpoint, is to try to take a piece of our time and our energy and our effort to try to make this a little bit better all the way around. You know, if there are 100 people out of the thousands that we might be able to assist to get back on track, you know, that's a major contribution to the productive citizenry of this country. These are people that don't have to commit crimes, that don't have to live in prison, that don't have to cost us more money. They become productive citizens. They buy cars, they buy houses, they go to work, they get jobs, they get married, they have kids, and they do something that is semi-normal, even though they will be registered for the rest of their lives. That's the best that you can do.
But you know what? That is not a majority of your child molesters that are out there. That's not the life they're going to live. They're not going to have that beautiful home with a little white picket fence and children running around.
And if you
That's not going to happen with all of them. That's a small percentage of those that may be successful.
I didn't say that I specialized in child molesters.
Right.
You know, I was very clear to differentiate.
Yeah. Well, there's just not enough programs out there. What's really sad is so many of our victims are becoming a part of the system because they can't survive in society, because of that demonic seed that was planted. And that's the part that disturbs me, is that there is nothing out there for the victims, and there's all these people that are wanting to come forward to help the sex offenders.
Well, but I think that statement would be true for the victims of almost any kind of crime. I don't think there's enough support systems for victims of lots of things. Now, you know, these are more heinous crimes, I will grant you. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the support systems are not adequate for them either, because they're not adequate for anybody else.
Right.
I mean, hell, there aren't enough support systems for regular citizens who are suffering under foreclosure for no fault of their own.
Yeah,
we're
I agree.
A government that's trying to bail out investment banks, for crying out loud.
Yep, and senior citizens, we can go on and on and on.
Absolutely. Yeah, but the point in case here is, Judy, you feel that there's not enough done to punish these offenders. Is that correct?
You know what? Our judges are letting these guys out, and they're dumping them back into the community without any type of rehabilitation. These guys are not getting big enough of sentences. These child molesters are getting 5-10 years, and they should be getting, a lot of them should be getting life sentences. You molest a child, you know what? Goodbye.
So now, John, your whole point is you believe that they shouldn't even be put in prison or sometime. But more so, we should try and rehabilitate them. Is that correct?
Well, no. Let me go back to my initial differentiation, which is that I'm not.
And we're
really
getting down to the last couple
of
minutes, and I think Mike might have an email to read off at the end.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that, you know, if we're going to talk specifically about child molesters, you know, there's a whole different set of rules and regulations, and I would agree with Judy that those rules should be different for those kinds of people. I am not as sympathetic to them in the same way that I'm not sympathetic to predators. I'm much more sympathetic to people that do, you know, one stupid thing one time in their life, which is more of the, you know, quote-unquote mainstream offender, if there is such a thing. But, you know, one of the things that I don't think is helpful is putting people in prison for life, because the fact of the matter is it doesn't really change anything, and all we're going to be doing is we're going to continue to be continue to live in a state where the Department of Corrections is the second largest industry behind tourism.
One sex offender, one child molester, doesn't just damage one person's soul. It damages the whole family. It's a domino effect.
That is
child that he molests and gets away with it, that's another family that he's destroyed. And he should never get a chance to get out and do that again.
I absolutely agree, but I think that there's got to be another solution that we can find that is more productive and much more proactive. And maybe it's electric shock, or maybe it's locking them in a room with me with a knife and a gun.
I'll go in a room.
Okay. Judy and I have just solved the recidivism problem.
Well, you know, guys, actually, this Mike in Colorado, we're kind of running out of our time here. And I had a last-minute comment that came in from Justin in Tampa again saying, John and Judy, I think you can both make a big difference in Tampa, Florida, and the USA. I think Judy and John should team up. So you got a vote of confidence there that you guys ought to team up together and find a solution that can, you know, I mean, take care of part of the problem. I mean, because once the sex offender's down, obviously they got to go somewhere. So how do you handle it, and how do you try to take care of the problems? You know, and I don't know if we can solve that in an hour tonight or not. I don't know, Chris. What do you think?
I think we need to have a couple more shows.
That's right.
Maybe one or two.
Judy always parlaying it. That's pretty good. But yeah, we can down the road open up the dialogue, but there needs to be. I don't know. It's a complex issue. Yeah.
We need to lock these baby rapers up, and all these Romeo and Juliet cases, we need to get them out of the registry.
I will
yeah, there's no easy
last.
Solution.
Yeah, we can eliminate some of our numbers. It's not as bad as it looks, but it's still not good. There's a small percentage we can get rid of, but I think that our judges just need to tighten up.
Cool. Well, we are out of time, everybody. And, Chris, do you have any last-minute comments before we wrap it up for the evening?
Just an interesting argument. Heard a lot of different points and just something for people to think about. It's not as black and white as we might think, but Judy made some great points, and so did John.
I would
Thank
have
you very
to
much
agree.
For the opportunity to discuss.
Well, John, I want to thank you for being on the call, and Judy, thank you for being on the call. You guys are both very passionate about your positions, and, I mean, you both have things. You're right. Both of you have your own viewpoints, and they're both right to a point. And, you know, I'm not choosing a side, yes or no, and I don't think Chris is either. I think this certainly deserves more discussion, and the more we get it out there to the public, I think the better off everybody is.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't we schedule a show after I tour one of John's facilities?
Well, now there's an idea. I like that.
I'll have Anthony follow you around and film. Actually,
okay.
There you go.
We'll get some pictures. Right, we'll put it up on the website on Millionaire Smackdown. We'll get them up ahead of time. And then
I'll be looking forward to an email.
We'll give you guys emails, and then you guys do the rest. And whenever you guys are ready, let us know, and we'll reschedule another one.
Thank
All right,
you,
very
I look
good.
Forward to the opportunity. Nice chatting with you, Jim.
Likewise.
All right, everybody, have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Mike. Good night.
Yep, you're welcome. Good night, everybody.